We'll start all the way to my left, which is your right, and we'll start with Steve Freed, and he is with ADM Research out of Chicago, Illinois. Steve, how long have you done that job now?
13 years.
13 years, and I imagine in the company before that, too?
A couple other companies, too.
And he is responsible for the technical analysis and fundamental analysis each and every day for ADM, passes that information along to those brokers around the country that clear with ADM. And give a good round of applause to Steve Freed, please.
Thank you very much. It's great to see all of you out tonight for our presentation and our comments. Hopefully we can make some of these markets a little clearer for you. And if you have any questions down the road, please feel free to ask us. I work at the Chicago Board of Trade, and every day we watch the market fundamentals as they come into the marketplace. And most of the presentations that I've been giving of late, I've kind of broken them down into three areas. Number one is the numbers, the supply and demand numbers that have a tendency to push prices one way or the other. Then we have the funds. They're a new breed of traders that are in the commodity markets, mostly because of the high energy prices and high metal prices, but they are putting more and more money every day into our grain markets and what kind of impact that might have. And then finally, just an outlook on the futures, and both from a speculative side and from a hedge side. The numbers right now are bearish soybeans. We have a record amount of supply of beans here in the United States and in the world. We're approaching a time frame in South America where their harvest, once it begins, will take away from our export demand. The numbers that the USDA put out in January and probably the following numbers in February and March will probably be the most bearish numbers we've ever had in the United States. I think the market has as much of a dollar premium in it right now based on uncertainty of weather in South America and the weather in the United States. And there's some premium in there from the index funds who are coming in buying a lot of our contracts. Assuming normal weather in South America, we should take part or maybe all of that out in the next 2 or 3 months. So I'd be buying puts or selling old crop cash and looking ahead at the marketing year next year. In the corn, I think for the last 6 months I've been saying we're pretty close to a low, for the short term, corn will probably follow beans. We had a lot of fun buying today at the rally in the market. When I look at Deese corn, I just really don't think it's going to get much below 240. We're going to have record demand next year. We might have fewer corn acres, and it's going to be hard to follow up last year's weather. Talk to the climatologists, they're looking for a dry summer, at least west of the Mississippi. So anytime these corn's around 240, I'm a buyer. As far as the funds are concerned, you've got three types of funds trading the market right now. Traditional funds have about $140 billion in the commodity markets. They trade momentum, they trade moving averages, they can be long, they can be short, and they follow basically the momentum of the market. And right now, they really don't have much of a position in our markets. I think they're waiting for a bottom to come in and buy the market, given all of the positive signals they're seeing in outside markets. We also have the index funds. They are only net buyers of futures. They pay 100% of the value of the contract. They have about $70 billion that they're trading commodities right now. And the first week in January, I think they bought 30,000 corn, maybe 15,000 beans, 15,000 wheat, 15,000 oil contracts. And since they're paying 100% of the value, they're in there for the long haul. And you can look on like Goldman Sachs website and see what percentage they're putting their money into energies, into metals, and into grains. From a future standpoint, I think that I almost have two accounts. You know, the fundamentals are bearish. You should be long puts going into your crop year, but you also probably should have an account where you're following the trends in the marketplace. We usually make lows in February. We usually have a rally from February to May, and that's probably your window for a chance for these markets to rally. We have an interesting global situation where we have record supply and record demand. So every year we have to grow a good crop to satisfy that record demand. David's kind of the expert in all the markets, but the price of sugar has tripled in just 1 year. And sugar is trading now as energy, as a fuel, as a green fuel. And somewhere down the road, corn might trade the same way. The more ethanol we produce, the more premium that market's going to have. Now, one thing that the funds do, if they continue to add contracts in the grains, that might put a premium on the market and probably make your basis wider at the elevator to try to find value. So if the funds are going to be worth 10 or 20 cents in corn, you might see the basis 10 or 20 cents wider than normal. So that's just my quick thoughts.
Thank you, Steve. Next to Steve is David Hightower of the Hightower Report. Comes out, I believe, twice a month that way, but also electronically just about every day. Some 3,000? How many is it, David?
Probably a lot more than that.
It's probably a lot more than the number that we were looking at in Allendale's over the weekend, but it's a bunch of people that are taking this information and looking at it. And David is a proponent of using option strategies in terms of working the marketplace, and he also pays a lot of attention to outside markets, sugar, oil, copper, all very important for us as grain traders as well, and I'm sure he'll get into that too. David Hightower, a round of applause.
Well, I think I've said a couple times in this room and a little bit west of here in the auditorium that we were headed to this boom or bust type of environment. And unfortunately, you probably feel a lot like Rodney Dangerfield in that the grain markets are going to be the last to join into that parade. But I assure you, in whatever catbird seat that I feel like I sit in by watching across a lot of markets, seeing a lot of participants that are from completely different areas than what you're interested in, whether it's the funds, foreign governments, foreign traders, a lot of different players that are coming into the commodity market. And I don't know if this is a fair statement, but the amount of money that Steve listed that is into the commodity markets in the fund and index area could very easily double. It could dominate, and I think it's possible that the commodity markets in the next 2 years or so will become as hot, if not a hotter, fad than the internet in the high-tech scenario, because there's a difference in commodities. This is something we actually need. We didn't actually need 120 different websites to give us that much information, but we need these raw commodities, and it's shocking, it's scary. The amount of interest that's coming in, it's a huge tidal wave. And when you look at it, it all emanates from the energy markets. The energy markets are that first sign that the world now has got to that point where we can't conspicuously consume with reckless abandon. And I like to make the analogy that the China situation and the India situation, this is something that we've never seen in history. If you go back following World War II, we didn't have this kind of prosperity this rapid by this many people ever in the history of the world. And the Jim Rogers book, Hot Commodities, probably is a little bit over the edge in terms of how aggressive things are, but it is true that there's just not enough stuff in the world. And I could sit here for probably 15 or 20 minutes and go run through a list of what China is consuming 30, 40, 50% of on a world basis. But it's quite shocking that this wave is coming, and the energy market is that first endemic scenario. And as Steve already alluded to, we've already seen the price of sugar triple. We're seeing the bean oil market drug into the energy area. The corn market's already well in its way into that area. And as we look over the next 6 months to a year, the energy price situation is probably going to become much more extreme. The thing that worries me the most is that the $65 crude oil run, $70 crude oil run, it notched back the world economy a little bit, but it didn't really throttle it down. And so we kind of built up our hide a little bit. We became used to it, but now we're going to have to filter those higher costs through transportation, manufacturing. We've seen gold prices rise to almost $600 an ounce, and I can tell you that 5 or 6 years ago, the gold market was DOA. It was viewed as a commodity market that they might stop trading. World central banks were liquidating gold because it was no longer a viable asset. It wasn't a solid investment for them, and now they're back into it. We're seeing those signs. We're seeing higher wages. Miners around the world are starting to strike now because they see the prosperity being created by high copper prices and zinc prices and lead prices. And so this is a huge tectonic type of tidal wave that's coming in here, and it's going to spread. We're going to see the sugar market basically run through its supply and create a huge deficit. We're going to burn that sugar for fuel. We're going to see the sweetener market then become impacted, which is going to come around to the corn market. Both the corn market and the soybean oil market are ramping towards that biodiesel ethanol injection. And so far, we've been fortunate enough to have these massive productions, and Steve said it. We need a large crop. What did you say, Steve? 11.5 billion we're probably going to use in corn? Probably going to be that and higher. So every year that bar is going to continue to be raised higher and higher. And we're going to quite literally, if you saw the old cartoons where they had the locomotive and they were throwing wood into the wood box trying to keep the steamer going, we're going to try and burn everything that's not nailed down. And I think in a couple of publications they say, what is the answer to the world oil situation? Is it solar? Is it nuclear? What is it? And the answer is all of the above. Because you can't take, and just throw out a few statistics, the United States burns 40% of the world's gasoline. We need 60 to 70 large global scale refineries built in the next 15 years just to keep pace with the type of consumption that we are adding to the equation. China is going to go from 25 million automobiles to 57 million by 2010, which isn't too far off. And so when you start adding all that up, if they try and live the way we live, it's just not going to go easy. And so we're in the midst of what I think is an inflationary push, and maybe it's not going to be the wild gyrations that we saw in the 70s, but I think that rising tide is going to lift all boats. And from a perspective of this year, I'm a very big proponent of options. I think it's necessary to kind of control the volatility that we're going to see, because we could very easily see 50 to 70 cents downward in the soybean market, maybe in the next month, month and a half. The funds will see that as an unbelievable value. And so we may, at times this year, the fundamentals may not matter at all. And if the corn market's 10 or 15 cents below where it's at, and the soybean market's 50 cents below where it's at, the funds are going to look at all these other high-priced... They're going to look at all these other high-priced commodities, and they're going to rotate their capital into that area. And so we will find out that we are going to put those premiums back into these markets that we've taken it out. So it's important to be able to weather the down throttle. So I see a break in the next month, month and a half, and that might be the low of the year, because I think this big picture, either the funds are going to get it, the fundamentals don't support a significantly lower price structure, especially in the corn market and soybean oil. So it's a good time. I think there's a song, this is the best of times, this is the worst of times. We're going to be able to produce about as much as we can stand, and I think the world's going to go through it fairly quickly. But this rising tide is serious, and it's energy markets, I think, is the beginning of everything. So watch them, and as they go higher, I think they're going to pull the complex higher. Thank you.
Thank you, David. To my right, your left, is Dan Zwicker. He is with AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, and he is on our air every Thursday morning at 9:50 in the morning, and then again at 2:06 in the afternoon on the Closing Market Report. And Dan, a longtime friend of WILO Radio, and an opening comment from you, sir.
Thank you, Dave, and it is a pleasure to be with you this evening. I guess where I think we're at, I'm just going to kind of give you a brief summary of what I think is going on. I think the corn market is similar to where the soybeans were a year ago. It's not going to be the exact same play out, but what I'm looking at is that we put the final nail in the coffin of the big crop of 2005. The market reacted to those bearish numbers that USDA gave us here for 5 to 10 days. We've slid down. Corn market now over the past couple of days has perked up. Now, I don't know necessarily what the catalyst was, but it seems to be a quasi-official planning estimate from Informa Economics that corn acres are going to be down something like 2.5 million. Now, the trade's been talking about this drop in corn acres for some time. I mean, we've heard numbers maybe as high as 4 or 5 million. Then we've heard people saying they didn't think they'd change much at all. But it does seem like that has been a catalyst similar to what it was last year. I mean, last year, the movement was to move away from soybeans and into corn because nobody wanted to mess around with rust. And then, you know, dry weather took hold in late January, early February in South America and basically pulled down production prospects of soybeans. So you had supply and demand tightening, or at least the visuals. Now, we weren't going to run out of beans, but you had the visuals of supply and demand tightening, and the market had to react to that. And I think that's where we're at in corn. Instead of dry weather in late January, February, pulling down soybean prospects, we had dry weather during December and January in South America that basically pulled down corn prospects. So you do have some tucking in of production. Argentina's down about 3 million tons or so. Now, while we have a record supply around of corn, well, not, I guess not a record, but we have a pretty good supply of 2.4 billion, you pencil in a 2 million or 3 million acre drop in plantings, and then, of course, the wild card, of course, is what kind of yield you're going to put on it. But you do have, you know, expanding ethanol market in corn. You have an expanding demand base in corn. So there is some visuals that the corn balance sheet could begin to tighten. Now, it's not going to ratchet corn up, you know, 50 cents in the next couple months, but there is some visuals there. And then it's debatable about whether or not the last 2 years were just fluke years where we had this 149 or so this past year and then 160 there a year ago. If those were just years that we had big bubbles up in yields and we fall back to the low 140s or 42 or 43, or we have permanently raised the average yield, I don't know. But if you know, if you put a national corn average yield down around 42 or 44, you've got a different balance sheet. You've got supply demand tightening, and the market's going to respond to that. Soybeans, there's no supply demand tightening, just like there wasn't any corn last year because we were increasing corn acres, demand was sluggish, so the corn market kind of tracked sideways while soybeans tried to strengthen as we went into March, and then it fell off a little bit in April, but then, you know, continued on into the June, July time frame, and then hot weather took over and kind of corn became the leader. So corn is the key here, I think. If you could get corn to follow through with this gains that we saw this week, you might be able to mute some of the bearishness over in the bean complex. Because the function of the corn market then will be to try to pull those acres back into production if it can. And if it pulls those acres back into production, then you begin to maybe start a supply-demand tightening in soybeans. Instead of having a 3 to 4 million acre increase, you may bring it down to only 2 million or 1 million, who knows. So I think corn's got to be the leader here, and it's got to mute some of the bearishness in soybeans. Now, this is the time of year that I think the market can just about spin anything. Who's ever got the loudest voice can probably spin anything, because we don't know what kind of planting season we're going to have. We don't know if it's going to stay dry. We don't know if it's going to turn wet. We get into delayed plantings of corn, and we actually lose more acres of corn than what the market's working in. Then those planting delays may extend to bean planting delays, which reduce yield prospects. So the weather can be mixed up here. You can spend about anything you want here. I think energy prices are at a point that if we did have a hiccup in the Mideast and oil shot up to 80 or $85 or whatever you want to run it, I think the panic that we saw in Katrina would be just viewed as a warm-up. And I think if something like that did happen, the trade would look beyond current supplies and worry about how is that going to impact acres in marginal areas, all this increase in input costs. So I do think the pot can get stirred up for a rally. But I have to admit, when you look at the raw fundamental data, we got a mountain to climb, at least for now. But all the markets start when there's no hope. And probably after the January crop report, you look at those numbers and you go, well, how is this thing ever going to rally? But it seems like the market has started to focus on all of the uncertainties and the things that could go wrong. And that can kind of run here. And as Steve mentioned earlier, seasonally, you begin to kind of strengthen in here. You got to be a little careful about that, but I do think seasonally we're ripe to strengthen. It seems like ever since we got into this crop insurance game, the market seemed to rally during February and then go down. And one of the reasons the actuaries picked February was because it's one of your lowest months of the year. So it seems like it goes against some of that. But I guess that's enough for now. I got some price objectives we can maybe get into as we get discussion going. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Dan. Let's go ahead and have a couple of rounds of questions, and then we'll go out to the audience and see what you have for us today. Prices at the Chicago Board of Trade today. Let's look at corn. March ended the day 213.25, up 5. July 232, up 4.75. December 249.5, up 3.5 on the day. December corn today, it went through its 20, 50, and 100-day averages on the way to its settlement price today. We went up to Chicago and did a little checking. Some 15,000 contracts were purchased by the funds today. And some of those contracts were this thing called index funds, which brings us to our first question. And that question goes to Steve. Steve, you get to talk about index funds. Give us the lowdown on what they are and what they mean to the marketplace.
There's been a lot of meetings in the Farm Belt.
Hold it to the top.
Yeah. A lot of meetings in the Farm Belt about, number one questions that a lot of farmers have is, who are these funds and what is the index funds? And as I mentioned earlier, there's about $60 to $70 billion of index money coming into the marketplace. These are stock people who are moving money from the equity markets into commodities. In the grains, they'll buy 100% of the value of the contract. It's not margined, and they will be there for the duration or as long as they feel that particular market has value at its current price level. They are paid on performance, so every quarter, they will be taking some of their positions off to get paid. So at the end of December, we saw the market gyrate in a lot of markets. Crude oil had a big sell-off, and metals had a big sell-off, and the grains had a big rally. And probably some of that was the index funds getting out of their positions. They continue to put money into the marketplace. It's probably our biggest growth area, as I mentioned. About 70% of their money is in the energies, and then they put various percentages into the other markets. About 11% of the money goes into the grain markets. And I guess they're just longs in the marketplace. They do not sell the contracts. When they look at the commitments of traders every Friday, the report that shows the composition of the marketplace, they're considered a commercial because they're only a buyer. They're not considered a fund. So that means they have unlimited number of contracts at Board of Trade that they can trade. They're not limited as a fund. They agree not to take delivery of the marketplace. So they're going to be rolling their contracts from one contract to the next. So you might see some interesting spread relationships, like when they start rolling the positions out of March. They've already started this week rolling positions out of March corn and March beans and going to the May. So you might see some weakness in the March relative to the May on a spread relationship. Another area of funds that we have is called hedge funds, and they're a smaller part of the family. We don't know exactly how much money they have, but they're theme traders. Dave talked about China. They may be long grains because of China. They may be long grains because of inflation. They may be long grains because of ethanol. They're theme traders, and they'll stay in that position as long as the theme is important. So your index trader, he's only a buyer. The first week in January, he came in and bought in the last 5 minutes of the trade. For the most part, they will be buying on the close. And they will come in, and they're averaging about 3,000 corn, maybe 1,500 beans, 1,500 wheat, 1,500 oil that they'll buy each day on the close. The one large AIG fund is done buying. The Goldman Sachs fund has not yet started buying their asset allocations. And most of these index funds have until the end of March to shift money from the energies and the golds into the other commodities, including the grain. So there's no set time, but they have to be done by the end of March.
I might add something to that real quick. The financial maneuvering that can go on. I was in the world's largest bank in the second week of December for a quantitative research club meeting. They said, could you come over and speak to us? And so I went over, I walked in there, and there were 170 fund managers and or other type of people in that room. And I went through my presentation, and I showed the chart of the money under management, and they snickered. There was a laugh that went through the room. And they were, and the funny joke was that a lot of those people in that room had that kind of money under their discretion. And so whenever I say how much more can come in, it could be quite significant. But there's other deeper things here. We talk about how the basis can get so far out of whack that the cost of transportation is already forcing us to use corn in Nebraska, to use it in Iowa, to use it in Illinois, rather than shipping it halfway around the world. You have to figure out a way to utilize the value there. Well, what happens is these funds don't take delivery, but something else is happening. The volatility in the marketplace and the potential for inflation and soaring energy prices has caused a lot of people that deal in commodities to begin to hedge, and they haven't really hedged at the commercial level as aggressively as they may. So they're going to actually take some of that supply, long-term hedges, and another thing that they're doing is they do a lot of derivatives. They'll do over-the-counter type of derivatives so that they can get their exposure protected. And those people, when they see the basis at such a low level and the value of a commodity so low, they are liable to take delivery and hold that commodity until they get what they think is a fair rate of return on it. And so what we really have is, and I've seen this in the sugar market and in the copper market, in which we actually get the commitments that they make in the marketplace are so many times over what we actually can produce or have available. And that's what we've already seen in terms of the oil market. 15% of the world oil market right now is locked up in paper contracts. They think 7% of natural gas is locked up by that, and it may go to 15%. So really what we've actually done is raise the bar. We need that much more production than we had. And think back in over the last 40 years, we used to have the PIC programs, we had government reserves, but now we're seeing India, China, the United States, and Europe begin to build strategic petroleum reserves. And so the other side of that coin is there are big entities that are going to go and take this supply down, and they will take delivery, and they will take it off the market. So if there is an interest in the market, and they do think it's a value, it could be put into very strong hands, and it would be a lot firmer hold than what you see in the index funds.
And I just need you to make a definition for me. What is a derivative?
Oh, man. Well, just to keep it simple, a lot of companies that don't want to go into the marketplace and affect the hedge will go to a trader, a bank, or an institution and say, look, I cut away all the confusingness. I want you to guarantee to me off the exchange, and again, then you have the credit risk. If they say they're going to protect you from a $5 or $10 million exposure to buy corn later in the year, you don't have the security of the exchange to back that up. But they'll say, look, I think it could be so violent. I want you to guarantee me that you're going to provide this commodity to me at this price. And they'll set a price. And more than likely, the price of that's going to be what the flat price is and the cost of a call option for that period of time. But that person doesn't want to go into the marketplace, and so they make them a contract or a physical obligation that guarantees them what they're looking for. And that entity will then have to go into the market and somehow hedge themselves. So it gets complicated, but it's merely just a passing on of the risk to a different party.
Comment?
Yes, sir.
The derivatives screwed up the bank in London. That one guy is trading on derivatives. Brought that one big one.
Nick Leeson.
Shot it right out.
Exactly. And whether we like it or not, we won't be able to keep them out of it if they decide to get in. So, I mean, it's going to breed that volatility that I'm talking about. So the derivatives can cause and wreak havoc in a market. But it's a little different in these cases because these are physical commodities, and a lot of the stuff that they were dealing in did not necessarily deal with physical commodities. It was stocks and bonds and currencies. So there's a little difference here.
Dad, you said the loudest voice can spin the marketplace. So who is the loudest voice right now, and what is the spin?
I don't really know who's the loudest voice, but what I meant is that the trade has a tendency to get focused on one or two things at a time, and whenever somebody wants to pick one of those up and talk about that all the time, I mean, you can kind of take a look at what happened to us in November. I mean, if we talked about one day about bird flu, we talked about it for about 30 days in a row, and we heard about 10 times a day on the radio or the newswire. So I think at that point, so there'll be something come along here. For the moment, I think the trade has stirred the pot up a little bit and beginning to focus on what these higher input costs may do to corn acres and what weather may do to corn yields and all that. So we are now at the uncertainty level of the growing season. But once that crop is planted, then the uncertainty window closes. But so that's kind of what I meant is that something can kind of come along, and everybody gets on that bandwagon, and away we go. So we'll just have to kind of listen to the market and see what it wants to spin that particular day or week.
Well, let's put it where the rubber hits the road, and we'll go ahead and stay with you then. Since 1973, between March 1st and September 1st, December corn has traded over $2.60 in 28 of 33 years. That's 85% of the time. And over $2.70 in 26 of 33 years, 79% of the time. Any reason to believe that 2006 will be different? Or will it be the same and better?
Well, there's always something that comes along, but I think probably would be maybe a little better guideline would be maybe to take a look at the average prices of corn or soybeans over a particular window, over a 5-year window or a 10-year window or wherever you want, and kind of maybe pivot your marketing decisions from that. Now, seasonals are seasonals. Markets do go counter-seasonal, but as we mentioned earlier, we are now kind of in a window here that the seasonals begin to turn up, and they usually strengthen as you go on into first part of April, or basically until the trade can visualize whether or not the crop's going to get planted. If it looks like it's not going to get planted or something is going haywire, maybe that can seasonal can stay stronger for a little bit. But as a rule, once you get the crop planted, we've got a crop. As I kid a lot of people, we're only one rain away from a record crop once we've got it planted. That's the mentality of the market. Because you can't raise a crop when it's in seeds in the bag. But we can argue about whether or not it's a half a crop or a third of a crop or whatever. But once it's planted, you lose a lot of uncertainty. But I would say that seasonally here, December corn on a 5-year average or 10-year average, We're probably a little bit underneath the average price. Looking at some average prices of December corn, starting here around first week of January, it kind of looks like we're like $2.55, and then we have a tendency to strengthen to about like $2.65 or so by the first week of April. So we got December corn back to $2.50 here after today. My guess is that I think the fundamentals are strong enough that December corn ought to be able to move up toward that 10-year average. We ought to begin to see some 255s, some 260s, and maybe even 265 before planting. On those opportunities, I guess I would be a seller of corn. Actually, I kind of like starting here this 50 area. I don't, you know, we're talking about a smaller increment, but 50 is not a bad place to start, but I think between 50 and 265, and between now and April 1st or mid-April, I think you need to have a pretty meaningful chunk of your corn at least hedged up or sold, depending on which way you want to do it. But that's what I would look for. I do think, looking at the charts, if today's action is valid, it does look like there's maybe 15 cents up from where we closed at today, potential in this market. Like I said, the fundamentals, you look at those and you go, how and why, but you know, it looks to me like March corn is going to go ahead and make a new high for the year. I'm going to take out 21, maybe go to 25, and I'd say an outside chance of maybe going to 31. So these corn looks to me like if you could add 15 cents to it, we're in this 49, 50 area, we could maybe go to 65. But I'm not. So those are some boundaries, at least what I would look at between now and you know, first part of April. So.
But David, I'm a little bit nervous because you said fundamentals just may not matter anymore, which means to me I better get some option strategies in place. Go over the option potentials here.
Well, I think we have to realize that we don't know, and I think I try and do my job by saying, where do I see the biggest potential move, and what direction is that? And I mean, when you look at corn, you have to feel like we are in some kind of close to the bottom percentile of what may happen. But I think we should sit here today and realize the weather spin, the market spin. We've seen things that we couldn't, without a hurricane rain last year, we would have had a completely different scenario. But instead, we had much lower pricing than probably anyone would have than the 90% of the trade and production people would have ever expected. And so I think those options, that's what they give you, is the right but not the obligation. That's how they explain them to you. And I try and utilize what's going on in the marketplace, and I look at the amount of cost in a call option. And back in 1985 when they came online, we probably paid too much for call options out of the box and didn't get volatility. Saw that expire, didn't get them to work for you as you would like, and so you soured on them. But now that we're in this different environment in which I quite frankly can't tell you whether we could have a $1.80 December corn price and we could have a $2.90 or $3 December corn price. Today we wake up, we have bird flu, we don't have bird flu. Tomorrow we've got $90 crude oil. All these things are virtually unpredictable. So you have to sit there and say, which way does that supply and demand table lend you to think there could be a move? And so from an option standpoint, I think I don't have to decide. I think if I see that kind of strength in corn over the next 5-6 days, I'm a seller of my corn, and I'm a replacer of that corn with a situation which I can say, here's what the defined cost of that is. It leaves me in the game in case something happens. I don't have to flirt with that basis level. I don't have to worry about all those other scenarios. And I think you can sell March and April and possibly even May call options that are 10, 15 cents out of the money. Look at them. Sell those call options. Turn around and buy yourself a SEP or a DEECE call. The carry difference in the market allows you to be almost the same distance from the market that you are in that front month. The same one that you're long in the back. So what happens? If the acres aren't down, if we rain a little bit, if the South American crop forces us down, what happens? Those March and April and May call options are going to evaporate. You sold them, that money's yours, and you paid for that call option in September and December. So you've rid yourself of the cash, you've put yourself back in the market in case you need to be, and if the market actually falls down or does nothing in the near term, especially in those March and April call options, the market will pay for your hedge cost. Now, if we shoot off, take off to the upside, and go 30 or 40 cents in the upside, that strategy is not going to work. But I would rather speculate on that particular window right now than I would in July when we're saying, will it rain this weekend or not? And the bean market's the same scenario, only it's greater risk. There's a greater risk that you could regret not selling your bean crop. If we're 50 cents down, maybe we're going to come 80 cents back later in the year. But why take yourself on that train ride? Because if you go in, you can sell the May $6 bean calls, and you can turn around and buy yourself the September 620 or 640 calls. You're not going to have much premium on the table, and if they knock this market down, what happens? Your hedge was virtually very inexpensive. You don't have the cash encumbrance. You're done with that. When you go on that 50, 60 cent ride to the downside, you're not sweating it. The CECL options allow you to say, hey, I don't know. I'm going to try and benefit from volatility. So that should be your final answer. When I put my option strategy on, will volatility benefit me or hurt me? And will it give me the opportunity? One thing that I've said in the last 4 years of coming to this area is this: the following. You can't cut yourself out from a big year if it comes. You have to leave yourself in that big year because we know how bad the bad years are.
Well, Steve, I know you're just chomping at the bit to have a microphone, so I'm going to go ahead and give it to you.
Great comment so far. I hope you're taking notes. The first thing you should do is probably talk to your broker and make sure that they understand your individual situation and understand what you can and cannot do. Talk to your banker and kind of get a game plan going. When you talk about statistics, I think it was said that all the kings of England named Henry had 2.3 wives or something like that. So that'll get you something on statistics. Each year is different, and I think that a couple of the themes right now in the marketplace is that the person that controls how high these markets go in the next two or three months is the farmer. He owns the carryout, and if he decides not to sell, we're going higher. And there's got to be a price out there because the farmer has put 93% of the corn crop in an LDP or loan in corn, and it's free to the marketplace. And he also owns half of the soybean stocks right now with no LDP. And I think right now, taking a consensus of all the elevators that we talked to, that if we suggested farmers to sell cash right now, they wouldn't. They're looking for higher prices. To me, I think you need to sit down and figure out a good cash price if you want to sell at the elevator. And then if you do sell cash, replace that with call spread. If you decide you don't want to sell any new cash, you should put a put spread on just in case the market falls and we have normal weather. 60% of the final price that we have in the fall for your grain is going to depend upon weather. We all know what happened last year. We were all bullish last year in July, and then Hurricane Dennis came in and saved the day, and prices dropped pretty sharply after that. We're supposed to have another active hurricane season this coming year. But in a La Nina year, if you put down and ask a climatologist what type of weather we're going to have, they'll say that the dry weather we see in Kansas will expand northward into the Corn Belt this summer. So you're sitting here with all these bearish fundamentals. Farmer controls how price rallies. The weather sounds bullish, and it sounds like a market where you could do something in cash. An option is to try to protect yourself against some volatile swings in the marketplace. But I think it's going to be a wild ride. And when Dan was talking about the loudest voice, the loudest voice right now is, besides the farmer and what he's going to do, is the index funds. There are so many people in Chicago that are bearish soybeans right now. They just cannot explain why the market hasn't broken. And it's every day they come in and sell, they open and they buy a close for a loss. And it's because of the index funds. So that is a part of the market that long-term traders are frustrated with and really don't know how to deal with right now.
Well, let's just go with a show of hands and find out how many producers in the audience still have old crop corn to sell. Giddy up. Now, old crop beans to sell. A fewer hands, but not so fewer. I'm going to stay with you. You mentioned some calls and some puts, but I need some specific exit strategies for these folk.
Well, I think that I would probably hold on to my corn until I got into planting time. And as far as beans are concerned, that there's some, I think, March 560 puts that you can buy for like 15 cents, maybe 17 cents, and that'll allow you to go at least 30 days. That's probably the window in which the market would look at as far as selling off. We do have there's a lot of different forecasts of weather in South America. Our forecast is probably a little drier than most for Argentina over the next 10 days. That could have an impact on prices. But once they get into the harvest, we're going to lose a lot of export demand, and that's probably where the market, in theory, should make its lows. Now, some people are thinking that beans might not make their lows until the summer when we see what kind of crop we have. But I would hold on to my corn, and I'd probably buy a close to the money, very short time decay, put in the beans, and then leave my cash beans open for the last 3 years. Beans have rallied $2 from the Jan-Feb low on weather conditions in South America. One thing about Brazil, if they're getting rain, you say, okay, they're going to have a good yield, but they also have, so far, three times more cases of rust reported now versus a year ago. And so that's another issue that we have to be watchful of. And certainly their farm economic situation in Brazil has gotten a lot worse since last year. We saw reports where some farmers down there are returning brand new machinery that they bought because they can't make payments. And so their situation down there is not quite as good as it has been in the past. But I think that, again, I don't think the producers are ready to sell right now, so we should be trying to think of something to protect themselves against a down market and then let them hold on to their cash until we see what happens in 06 with our weather here in the United States.
Right now, in that corn market, we have a 36.25 cent carry March to D's. Pretty good. But the Chicago Board of Trade is going to decide very soon whether to offer side-by-side electronic trading, just like they do in the financial pits. And the question I have for Dave is, if side-by-side trading comes in, what are the potential implications for carry in commodities?
Well, more shrinkage of the carriage. Of the carry, and it's not been too successful recently on the launch of some of these new products. I mean, they've seen a lot of South American products they brought on, and it's almost like the target's moving so much that it's not being met with a lot of reception. So I think it would be not very well received initially. I'm not sure it's going to have that direct of an impact, but I think it will, if it does come into play and it does become viable, that it will shrink the carry. And I think that's I think that we're also going to see that energy component that I also talked about. It's going to have a huge impact. It's probably going to overwhelm everything else in the equation. The barge traffic on the Mississippi River, I was talking to a gentleman earlier this week talking about how the upriver traffic is almost heavier than the downriver, and the upriver traffic is huge amounts of fertilizer that's now being imported from other countries. Even the inputs into your crop that aren't tied to natural gas are going up because the mining costs are rising, and they can't get barge space, they can't get truck space, and they can't get rail space. So there's you can see there's a lot of countervailing items that are going to slam in each other. I think it'll be lucky if that contract's accepted this year and then sees a lot of volume. I think it'll meet resistance.
David was talking about energies, and he was talking about it from several different perspectives. Corn for ethanol, and then he was talking also about potentially soybeans for the oil in the crush for diesel. Between the two of these two things, might the loser become meal? The reason I bring it up is if diesel ramps up, more crushing necessary for the oil for diesel, thus more meal. But at the same time, ethanol plants increasing, it seems like just incredibly dramatically. I think we got something like 60 online, another 30 going to be online, or upgrades to some of those 30 in the next year to 18 months. And DDGs are really becoming a critical factor. And what used to be those DDGs going out to the coast on freight to the East Coast for sale are now staying locally and being used in the local communities for feeding and protein supplement. So I'm wondering, what happens to meal in all of this, Dan?
Well, you do create a problem if you're going to crush for soybean oil. You're going to have to find some new markets to pick up the slack on that. I'm not too sure, you know, that's not going to necessarily increase meal. It's just you're just going to use, you know, demand for oil. But maybe one way we could do away with bone meal. How about that? and put mad cow to rest. But no, that is, I think, your producer groups do realize that if we start down that path and want to use vegetable oil for diesel, biodiesel, and that we're going to have to figure out a way, some new markets for soybean meal, because it's just not going to be economically profitable just to crush the soybean just for oil. That'll be something that the market will have to sort out, and the prices will have to go down to a point where it generates new demand. But as far as ethanol production, there's no doubt about it. The byproduct is impacting, I think, the soybean meal market. And I think it explains one of the reasons why we were able to get through here a couple years ago on some very skinny supplies, is that was able to kind of pick up the slack.
And I'm going to go ahead and stay with you, because you talked about this potential taffy pull coming up between corn and soybean acreage, and the possibility of the battle at the Chicago Board of Trade about pulling more acres back into the corn. But I got to ask you, with this huge carryout, does it even matter? I mean, do traders really care about pulling more acres back into the corn?
Well, I'm not too sure traders themselves care, but the market, the end users worry about what may or may happen to distant supplies because of acreage shifts, weather problems, and outside market influences. So I think that's just a natural economic function of the market. If you're going to reduce potential production in one commodity, the market reflects that usually with a higher price, because it worries that if that type of reduction does take place, then that actually tightens supply and demand, and then that puts more value on that current supply, and vice versa. That is why the corn market couldn't get anything going last year at all, until finally, you know, around first week of May, after it had been frosted a couple of times, and the trade began to realize that at least the first part of the growing season wasn't going as well as what they had priced into the market, then the market began to respond, and then, of course, the weather really never did turn real favorable for us. It stayed dry all the way into July. But, and I think that's the problem that beans face right now, is that we've got a potential 500 or 550 million bushel carryout coming at us. And with that type of supply, that farmers are still willing to increase bean acres 2 to 3 or 4 million. So the market's, it's going to be real hard to catch the bean thing on fire, I think, over the next 60 days or 90 days. I do think, though, that rust will probably maybe be a more important factor this year than it was last year, but I think got burned out on rust and rust and rust and rust, and now you don't really hear anything of it And being in Texas, I think that increases the chances that that might be an issue that we'll have to contend with, and the Board of Trade will have to contend with that. Now, South American farmers got a lot of experience with it. It'll be new for us. That doesn't mean that we can't handle it, but there'll be a lot of logistic problems and whatnot if that does happen. So I do think that that is a factor out there that can reshape the bean market, but I think that's a May forward issue. I think between now and May, as Steve and David have both said, I mean, you look at the beans, it's hard to visualize a reason to go up, but it doesn't necessarily mean we have to go down either. So I look at the bean market, and I mean, the trend lines that I look on monthly charts are still pointing up. If you measure a trend line off of the 2002 low and the 2005 low at $5 last winter, we still have trend line support down here in this 5.25, 5.30. And we haven't busted underneath the fall low yet. So, but we're right here. I mean, this is kind of D-Day for the soybeans. So I guess that's the way I would view the thing. I think, you know, puts is an option. If you didn't collect LDPs, you still have the loan to kind of protect you out. You know, the bean market may take a little time to kind of get going. It may take a while.
I'm going to switch gears and move away from the grains for just a moment. And then after this next question, I'm going to go to you. So be getting those questions ready in your minds to ask our panelists. Everywhere I go, David, one of the things that I hear most from producers is, what is going to happen to LDPs? And what is going to happen to countercyclical payments? And what can the discussions with the World Trade Organization do to help me? I don't think they're going to help me very much. Based on what you know today, and by the way, tomorrow at the World Economic Summit, the U.S. and European Union are going to be sitting down again on the sidelines after what most people thought was an unsuccessful meeting in Hong Kong in December to try to hash out some of those subsidy versus market access issues once again. But based upon what you know now, what do you think, and it's way early, we all understand that, but what do you think might begin to shape the 2007 Farm Bill?
Well, this might surprise you. I think probably in any other environment we might have been under some significant threat. I think there might have been an attack on this, but I think the world leaders are, A, they can never get anything done definitively. They've come away from every one of these meetings and they have stalemated. They have, just look in the airline industry, look what's going on with Airbus and Boeing. I mean, that's a huge battle point, and they just can't seem to come away. So I don't think that the spin from the world trade situation is going to be as negative. I would have thought in a bad budget situation over the last 2 or 3 years, that was a bigger risk on what might happen to the farm program. I think that they are forward-looking enough to realize with what's coming out of China, I don't think they want to do something that's going to knock back production. I think they're going to leave it in place. You know, we may have had subsidies rise around the world. I know that sounds real cockamamie, but I think they don't want to have to deal with something like oil in other areas. So I think there's not going to be a major change, and the money is probably going to continue to be there for stimulating production, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but I think that's the way it's going to be.
Steve, do you want to take a crack at that question?
I've heard that the current bill will be extended 1 year, and I think the main reason is you're coming into a very close election. And I don't think the Republicans want to lose any farm votes at all. There's some congressional votes that are very close. So we've heard that they'll extend the current farm bill 1 more year.
All right, it's time for me to go out into the audience and see if you have any questions this evening. Such a large crowd of folk. I'm sure you're chomping at the bit to get something answered. Who has a question for our panelists this evening? Oh, don't be shy. Oh, if you're in the front row, you probably get called first in school, too.
Never shy.
I'd say March to May. Wouldn't that cause an increase in the spread rather than a decrease if they're long to start with?
And let me give the microphone to you, Steve.
I think so. It's just that, you know, we have record open interest. We have record crops. And so the commercial's on the other side, so he has to roll his hedges too. So I think they're initially, you know, everybody knows the dates they're going to be rolling. There's certain dates they do it and things like that. But as I mentioned, when they roll from like the March to May, they should be putting pressure on the March and maybe offer some support to the May, which would make a wider carry. But the commercials also realize that that's their opportunity to roll their hedges too. So you may not see as much of an impact now, but down the road when they, if they get larger, in the markets, you may have more of an impact.
Questions? Yes, sir.
Did the Cuban purchase cause this bubble we have in the markets just the last year or so?
Cuban purchase?
Yeah. 25 million tons of purchasing this year or something in that neighborhood. Is that right?
Anybody familiar? Oh, Steve, you're nodding your head.
I don't think that's not going to make a difference in the whole outlook. We're going to ship a little over 1.8 billion bushels of corn, and the Cuban situation, it's nice to have them back in the marketplace, but I don't think it caused this particular route. Right now, the pipeline is getting extremely thin. Ever since we had this break of 60 cents in beans and whatever it was in corn, there's no farmer selling, and so, especially in corn, you know, we are using a record amount every day domestically, and so we have to feed that pipeline. So I think that that itself could cause a lack of hedge pressure above the market. In commercial right now, end user has zero coverage. I mean, they feel the market's going lower, and so they might start coming in, especially the feeders, get some coverage on that market. So all those things, I think, contribute. But the lack of farmer selling is probably the number one thing that, if the market keeps going up, is the reason why there's just no overhead hedge pressure.
Questions? Let me come over to you, sir.
Funds, do they trade in the options?
Oh, a fairly straightforward question with a yes or no, but probably also with an explanation. Dan, do you want to take that?
Let the guys in Chicago take that.
You know, I'm sure they do, but you hear this from a lot of large commercials too. They just, the liquidity doesn't allow them to do the numbers that they like to do. And so typically they do use it a little bit, but that's not their first move. They might tailor their position a little bit, so they may do a strategy that allows them to really leverage up in a market, but it's typically not their first move, not big enough.
The funds that trade through us, the traditional funds use options, especially in corn, to increase their position. So if they're long, they might buy calls. 5-10 years ago, they would use options. As a hedge, they would take an opposite position. But now they're so confident in their formulas and their machines and things like that that they no longer do that. The index funds right now do not use options, but they will use over-the-counter in order to get maybe a long-term position. We've got some index funds that are already long out to March 07, so they might go over-the-counter to get long more contracts in 07 where the liquidity is not as big in the exchange traded contracts.
And you used the term, so you got it. Explain what it is, over the counter. What is that?
There are a few market makers that will guarantee buyers or sellers, a price out 3-4 years down the road. They'll charge you for it. You know, they might charge you 10 cents to lock in 240 corn for 3 years if you're an end user.
but you're locked in. There are others that will give you the 240 price at a certain cost, and then you can have, if you're an end user, any price below that for the next 3 years, and they'll check prices every week. You've got some that will give producers the hedge price for the fall or higher at a certain price. It's usually the cost of options and things like that. But it's mostly in the end-user category. If I'm a food maker and I want to lock in the price a week for 4 years, I can do that. It's going to cost me, but there is a market for that. And that's derivative trading over-the-counter, and usually the outside supplier, the ones offering the contracts, will go into the futures market to protect their hedge in the nearby markets, willing to take the risk of locking somebody up for 4 years.
Southwest Airlines is a good example. I think they have been long crude 4 and 5 years into the future, and a lot of these mini-mart gas stations have actually went to some of the ethanol places and have offered them to, we'll buy your gas 7, 8, 9 years off into the future. So they do that, they commit to a price, and then they have to go in to the market and hedge it.
I just made one comment. I think all of this has come to farm marketing, derivatives, swaps, strips, all this stuff. You're going to hear all this new terminology. I think I'm a little too old to take it on. But it's coming. It's coming to farmer marketing. I think you're going to have the whole new terminology to learn. They've been doing a lot in financials and energies and that. But I do think it's coming to farmer marketing sooner than you're ready for it. But I do think in the next year or so, you're going to see a lot of this activity. And a derivative, in one sense, you guys have been using derivatives. A cash forward contract is a derivative of the futures market minus whatever that person wants to take for his basis. And then now there's going to be people who want to spread that basis off. There's going to be people that will hedge your basis. So I think we're ready to go to a new complex marketing game over the next year or so. We're going to see a lot of that. So get ready for it. It just reminds me going back to the 70s when I was learning longs and shorts. It took me a long time on that one. But that is coming to farmer marketing for everything.
And then it's coming to AM 580 very quickly, too. Questions from the audience? Yes, sir.
Earlier, Dave talked about selling, say, March, April, May, corn calls at a higher level. And I'd like him to explain a little bit that opposed to buying the March, April, May puts. And just explain that a little bit, please.
More information about calls and puts.
Good question. And I'm not against puts, but I did notice last year that because I was long D's and long a bunch of $2 puts, that I didn't get paid on the big break. And there's a certain hesitancy on the part of speculators, traders, hedgers, what have you, that when you're at that bottom part of the historical price zone, people are just not, I mean, how far down, what is $1.50 corn put worth in reality? Is it going to be worth 50 cents at some time? I mean, it could, it's possible, but there is some hesitation, just like it doesn't necessarily happen at the other side of the equation when you have a $6 corn call, people think corn's going to the moon. So at the top end of the market, they puff up the value, but on the bottom side, there is some definition that, well, it can only go to zero. So I can tell you that a $1 corn put, you know, probably how much can it be worth? A dollar can't be worth more than a dollar. How much more could it get worth than that? So, I mean, that's an extreme. But the other side of the coin is, when I'm talking about drip, how many people, give me a show of hands, whenever I said, sell your beans and sell your corn right here, how many people thought I was just nuts? How many people thought, boy, that's the stupidest idea? A lot of you did, because you still have last year's in your pocket. Okay? But what I'm talking about here is, this is a simple derivative. I'm telling you, you're coming into a volatile period, and I'm saying to you for a price, and you know what, I can get you long twice your crop for 10 or 12 cents for the rest of the year, and that's all your risk is. You can sell one call, buy two calls, you can buy one call, and right now the calls and the puts are cheap. But if you wait and you make your marketing decision in July and August when the bullets are flying, they're going to pump up the value on that, and it's going to be three times as expensive. And so what I'm saying now is, I think you can get rid of your cash. Don't allow it to encumber you, and have some definition and not be shook out, because unfortunately, if we knock down hard in these markets, you're going to think it's the end of the world. I wish I would have sold 2 years back-to-back. I'm carrying this stuff forever. And you're not hedging. You're speculating. And you can replace now, and that's a good thing. You can have the benefit, but a defined risk by doing that. So don't get complicated by me saying sell a front month call and buy the back month if that's too confusing for you. Well, just go look out and see how cheap the December call options are and say, look, I have a peace of mind. Get rid of what I have, especially in the beans, and replace it with a call option. But sit down with your brokers, because they can offer you two or three different solutions to that. A bulk call spread, or a calendar spread is what I told you to do, or just an outright call play. And what are you doing? You're going to benefit from volatility, but now volatility is going to run you over. If you hold that cash, they hammer the price down for you, weather goes good. Think where we'd be if we do another 160 with big acres. We don't knock back either corn or beans. It's going to hurt people. The oil stuff that I'm talking about is not going to resurrect the market if we go into that kind of production cycle. So if you're not hedging, you are speculating. And the cheapest way to speculate now is look how cheap those call options are.
Questions for our panelists? Did I see a hand over this way? Maybe the question got answered. How about in the back? Any questions in the back of the room? Everything answered? Oh, no, we have still one or two to go. Let's see what we have over here.
I just wonder when dogs are
going to
hit the bottom.
Oh, we have one brave livestock person in the room. Dan Zwicker, hogs.
Well, my guess is that we're coming into a low fairly quickly. I think at least my interpretation of momentum indicators and the price action is that we're creating a situation where the market is being overdone. And of course, a lot of the weakness that we're seeing in the futures is driven by the cash, because it is a premium over cash. So when you get into a bear situation like we're in, we're going to lose that premium, and that's what the hog market is doing right in here with the sell-off we saw here today. It looked like yesterday there was maybe, or Friday, it looked like the market was maybe going to stabilize a little bit. But it wasn't able to generate any upside technical buy activity there on Monday. It kind of fizzled, and then today we sunk on down. We penetrated some moving averages that a lot of people kind of watch. But that's what it looks like to me. I think cyclically, we're kind of entering a time window here for one of these semi-annual lows and halts over the next few weeks. So I do think we're getting to the point where we could maybe be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel.
Questions for our panelists? Well, Bill, as long as you got them. If you don't got them, we'll close her down. Going once. Older. That didn't take very long, but I can't just shoot up.
Trading grains all electronically. Your open interest will be in the nearby contract.
So that's why you take the carry away. Right now you're spread out. With the open outcry, market's in full carry, market's paying the farmer to store the grain when the market needs it. But if you do electronic trading, most of your open interest will be in the nearby contract. It should take the carry, at least reduce the carry.
And is that what happened in the financials?
Oh, yeah, everything's front month. And that's where all the volatility is.
Questions? Yes, sir.
Do you think that the federal, the state, the local debt, government debt, and the lack of consumer spending pulling the U.S. economy down very much, and will that affect communities?
Well, we have an economy question, David.
You know, we didn't get the benefit when the economy was good on commodity prices, so I have a feeling that maybe that's not going to press it down. But again, keep in mind, we're a measly 300 million people here in the United States, and we're now have to consider ourselves with 5.7 billion other people. That the little credit card change where they increased the amount of minimum payments you had to make could have been a little stick in the spokes, but we really kind of got past that. That is a conundrum. That the Fed uses the conundrum term all the time, but it's just shocking to me that we are able to carry that kind of burden in consumer credit. I don't think that the state and local debt is going to go and grow because the tax revenues are, you know, we're doing pretty good. The corporate taxes that we're paying are fairly high, and people don't pay taxes unless they're earning that money. So the economy's doing pretty good at that level. But that's the way life is. The consumer will probably never get its act together. Those people with the consumer debt are probably always going to be living on the edge. So I always have to worry that could go into housing and the credit markets. That's a threat. That's a threat like bird flu that could hurt commodities. Both of those should not be discounted as threats to commodity prices. But, you know, this is a bigger picture thing. This is areas throughout the world that are coming into this consumption. It's not necessarily as based from the United States. And certainly we're a big consumer of oil, but we're finding our partners are getting bigger all around the world. Like the Chinese economy is going to become one of the main economies in the world very shortly.
I want to stay with you, David, just for a second, because that economy question had me thinking for a moment. You know, the Fed has had, I don't know, something like 12, 13, 14 consecutive quarter percent increases, and the perception is that we're going to need another one or two maybe. Is that what's keeping the U.S. dollar up? And if that perception begins to dwindle, does the U.S. dollar fall?
Well, it is keeping it up, and the dollar is going to fall. I'm a big proponent of thinking the dollar's got a long way to fall. The first crack in the dike was whenever the euro currency came on, and people said, well, first of all, the U.S. was the dominant currency. Look, they got a military, they got accounting rules, they've got all these things, that's why I want to put my money in the U.S. Then all of a sudden, we found out that our corporate fraud was high here, and we found out that we had a lot of unfavorable political views worldwide, and then we implemented the euro, and they said, look, we've got to diversify, let's put some in the euro. That they left most in the dollar. Now they got the Chinese currency. Unassailably, the hugest current account explosion is coming into China with all their trade surplus. And so now that currency is going to rise. It has to take value out of the dollar. I think in 15 years there'll be one currency. And I think the dollar's got to go into parity with a lot of others. So let's head it down.
Questions? Going once. Going twice, and when I say going three times, I'll be done. Oh, one hand in the back over here, just a second.
When should I fill up my fuel tanks if I haven't already?
Diesel, oil, gasoline, which kind?
All of the above.
Oh, he's got a bunch of empty tanks. Dan, are you ready to talk some energy?
Well, it'd be my guess that you need to buy weakness in here because I think seasonally oil is going to stay firm as you go on into May, and I think they got the Iran turbulence stirred up enough to kind of keep that seasonal in place. So I guess I would be looking to buy weakness in here. for a play that we would stay firm or strengthen as we go on into April, May.
I might add that you probably do have this. If we don't turn cold in 1st of February, they try to put some in there, and they're not really confident on it. But Dan, last week, last Saturday, we went to the seminar, and Skilling said that we're going to have 1 or 2 inches of snow, and there was 11 in the western suburbs of Chicago.
Well, he almost is right.
He had one decimal point off.
That's right.
There are some speculative longs that are in the energies because they think here's all this stuff going on politically. It's got to get cold sometime, and those people may have to throw in the towel here. And Dan's exactly right. There might be a little bit of weakness down here as we get rid of those people that didn't get what they want to see. But, boy, the hurricane season, the first one we've had in the last 8 years came in April, so there's not going to be any rest for the wicked. So if you're a little bit weaker in here in the next 4, 5, 6 days, I think you need to bite the bullet and say, thank you, God, for what happened since the high.
Well, you look like a deer caught in the headlights.
No, I think the scariest part of any farmer's P&L, the scariest part of any industrial company's P&L, any agriculture company's P&L is energy costs. And you have to do something to hedge against that because I really don't think it's going to go down.
Are we going to see $600 anhydrous in the spring day or day?
No, I don't
know. No. I don't know. You don't know.
Next year.
Next year. Questions for our panels? We have, I don't know, time for one or two more if you have one or two more. Going once.
One more comment, Jerry Dolke. I don't know if any of you can read him. Basically, he said in the competition the last time around that $40 billion would buy all of our corn and soybean crops, and he's not terribly far off on that, at $6 and $2. Well, if you look at this index fund at $70 billion, you know, our corn and soybean really is not a lot of money. They could have a tremendous influence if they decide to, either way. What's your take on that? Do you have a comment about it?
I thought the number was $1.3 trillion for those funds.
Well, I think there's a lot of rules and regulations at the Board of Trade that keep, as long as they keep up with their regulatory rules, I don't think the funds can take over our markets. It is scary to look at the sugar market. It is scary to look at the copper market. The funds now control about 80% of the open interest in some of the metals. They're only 20% of the open interest in corn. They're over 50% sugar, I think, right now. So I don't think the funds can make a bullish grain market go down. I don't think they can make a bearish grain market go up. But I do think that they can add a premium to the marketplace, and I do think it'll make an impact on the basis. But we're not at that point. I mean, they've only taken 4% of their $1.3 trillion and put it into commodities, and we only get 10% of that, and the grains only get 2% of that. So it doesn't sound like a lot of money to them, but we have record open interest in the grain markets now. And so that probably will continue to grow. So, again, my perception is it impacts spreads, it impacts bases, but I don't think it's going to make corn go to $4. We could have a period now where we're going to see higher lows and higher highs. One of the fund managers says he doesn't have any problem in the middle of a drought of having $8 corn. So the problem is most farmers don't have that very much to sell in the middle of a drought. But those are some of the pie-in-the-sky concerns about the funds. But I still don't think they can overrule the long-term fundamentals. If it rains this July over the entire Midwest, we will have lower prices.
Dan Zwicker, you want to weigh in?
Well, my observation is you still have to, as Steve mentioned, you still have to have the fundamentals. There has to be some form of visual that you can at least see a supply and demand tightening table to attract interest in owning it. I mean, these index funds are in the business to make money. They're not necessarily in it just for the fun of it. I mean, they're wanting to place some money down at the table and see if this thing can go up. But I think the positive thing of what index funds have done is that it has offset the bearishness of the commercial grain trade throwing hedges against the market all the time. So it's kind of been a neutral force. It's kind of served as new demand in a sense, is because they're holding this inventory. They're not necessarily using it, but they've taken it somewhat, lifted the market up. But the thing that bothers me, at least ever since index funds became more prominent in the commodity market last winter, basically they caught the trade basically short. They caught the commercial hedger short. They caught farmers short, because everybody was convinced that beans were going to go on down to $4 based upon supply demand tables, so that they were able to come in there and just buy this thing, and then you got into a supply demand tightening table, and it just took it up. So everybody that got short last winter scared to death sell this thing now. They don't want to get caught in one of these funds-led rallies anymore, so I think that's almost bearish in a sense, is because I think there's a lot of people waiting around for the funds to maybe run these beans a couple dollars like happened over the past couple of years. But it's only my observation. You have to have some supply demand tightening. Now, that may come in beans, but it's not right here at the moment.
You know, last year the funds came in, and they were not in all the markets. They came in and they led into the energies, and they kind of got into the metals, and they kind of came in with what they were comfortable with. There were the funds that go long and short the markets, but the index funds hadn't really started to increase their allocation much in alongside the grain markets. They're now, that money's in here, and it's sloshing around. It looks for the story. So like Steve said, you need the story. And if they get the story, then the money, it'll be like that airport movie where all the reporters come running out and knock over the bank of phones. That's what will happen when this takes place. I got to throw in a pitch for my hedge. If I sell my cash and I buy two calls and we have a big drought, guess what? I'm long, and I don't need the crop to be participating twice in the long side. So keep that in mind. If there's no fundamental reason why to be long this year, that's the strategy to be in. Out of your cash and long two calls.
One last question.
Somebody stated we needed 60 or 70 new refineries in the United States. What's the odds on that happening?
I think David was talking about that.
That was worldwide, and that's the EIA's projection. They talk about how much we need to keep pace, and the odds that we're going to get that kind of refinery is not very good. But we are, hopefully we'll be at 10% ethanol somehow, instead of the measly 3% we are, which is embarrassing compared to Brazil.
Let's go ahead and give these analysts a great, great hand. And don't go anywhere, because I know that Pete Manhart has some goodies to hand out this evening. Pete?
We want to thank Dave here also for sponsoring, for doing what he did here to help get all these questions out here. So thank you, Dave, and we got a lot of fun. Hopefully you will help us with that. And if we give a few goodies out, so these guys will stick around a while, you can corner them and ask them really what they think. I think they've already told you that. And coffee and cookies at the back, take some with you. Also lemonade back there. So we're going to dig in here. We use the bigger box so we can get to them. And Kurt's going to throw something out to Frank Hill from El Paso. Dave, you want to help there, or are you going to shut that off?
Okay. I'm going to help.
Man, Myriad from Holby. I'm going to throw one to you.